the Bumblecast. I'm your host, Ian Flynn, the Bumble King, and joining me as always is the world's largest flurgle, Kyle JCRB Krause.
Flurgle? Flurkin? I'm not a flurkin.
Was it a flurkin or a flurble?
It's a flurkin.
Flurkin. I do beg your pardon. That's horribly racist of me.
How dare
Please
you?
Please don't eat my face.
How dare you get my not species incorrect? I will eat your face, except I won't because I'm not really into human meat. It's a little gamey.
I heard it tastes like pork, but let's not get into that topic. We're going to be talking about Captain Marvel, the newest Marvel film. We'll do, like we've done before, a spoiler-free discussion at first, and then we'll go spoilerific later. So if you don't want to be spoiled, just tune out at that point.
Yes.
But first up, how have you been, sir?
I'm doing all right. I wish I had something cool to update the folks with, but I don't really have anything cool. My controllers are doing well, if you're wondering, but I don't really have anything new to report about controllers this week. So, otherwise everything else is fine. I'm not going to a convention, but I hear that you are.
Yes. If you are listening to this, it is because it is Monday and I have just completed the 3-day trial. That is Toronto Comic Con. If you were able to make it to the show and come by the table, I'm so glad you did. If you did not, that's too bad. Come to the show next year. At this point in time, when you're listening to this show, I'm probably dead in bed going, why do I do these things? Fighting off the concrete and all that. But it's worth it, Kyle. It's worth it to meet the peoples.
Meet the friendly, friendly peoples who don't talk to you on the internet, but do talk to you in real life. Because I know the people who talk to you on the internet, and they're mean.
No,
not all.
There are people on my Twitter feed who do show up at the shows. Very lovely folks.
I take that back. They're not all terrible, but we get a lot of questions toward the Bumblecast that are
charged, shall we say?
Yeah, sure. We have gotten those. And it's like we've already addressed this. What are you doing? Listen to the show.
Now, we do have a little bit of news about the show.
Uh-oh.
Or about Bumblecast in general. The Bumble store has been updated with a bunch of new designs. If you've seen the YouTube videos and you've seen the caricatures of myself and Kyle rendered by Sonic artist extraordinaire Tracy Yardley, and you find them appealing, I'm so glad you do, head on over to the Bumble store. You can get those on a whole bunch of clothing and paraphernalia. And every bit that you contribute there helps us out. Some of it goes to Tracy. So, you know, everyone benefits from buying Bumble swag.
The idea of my face, somebody wearing my face, is simultaneously hilarious and horrifying. I'm not sure which.
So long as it's a reproduction and not your actual face.
But it's funny, so I'm okay with it. So, hey, you can wear mine and Ian's disembodied heads. Have fun with that. Disembodied characters.
Yeah.
I know a few people who want your head on a steak. And I don't mean the kind of delicious steak that you can eat.
And, you know, as I said when we were before we were recording, people apparently taste like pork. That doesn't really go well with beef. The flavors don't really pair well, so you don't really want me on, like, a steak.
True.
Also, something we were touching upon, we'll get to the main topic in just a second, but we were touching upon in the chat with the patrons before we got started was that you have not really experienced the Assassin's Creed series at all.
I have not really experienced any of Ubisoft's open world games at all.
Now, I'm going to, I guess, put myself in the crosshairs yet again, but here's my recommendation to you, Kyle. Because I know how much free time you have, and you have no backlog of games at all, ever, that you want to play.
Assassin's Creed and, like, Far Cry are in the backlog. I'm pretty sure I have, like, all the old ones. I think I have Assassin's Creed 2 from an old free Xbox Gold giveaway thing.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah.
I'd say play the first one a little bit just to experience what the game started out on.
Yeah.
As...
I kind of know what they are. It's just I've not played them, so
it helps you appreciate how much quality of life improvements the second one made. And the first one's not bad. It's just a little clunky and repetitive here and there. The second one is the best in the series, right, bar none.
So I've heard. And that's the one I have, so hey.
Its sub-sequels aren't bad. They kind of add some fluff, but they're still functional. They're still pretty fun. Mm-hmm. The third one is a rushed mess. Do not touch it. The fourth game is my favorite out of the series, primarily because you stop doing the Assassin's Creed-y stuff and you become a pirate.
Yeah,
and you just sail around being a pirate, and that is so much fun.
That appeals to me. I like that.
Don't go for the other piratey one, Assassin's Creed Rogue. They took the grand concept of 4 and made it bad, so shame on them.
Mm-hmm.
And I've not messed with anything after that because they kept messing up with the formula. So I'm good with, as far as I'm concerned, it ended with 4, which was some kind of weird offshoot, and I enjoyed that. And that's my stance on Assassin's Creed.
Okay. See, I've heard good things about the newest two of them, Origin and Odyssey, too. Those sound interesting. But, man, it's just so hard. It's like, why is the series so long-lived? And why are all these games so long? It's like, I don't have time for this. I can beat Super Mario Brothers 2 in an hour. I don't need this. So much time.
Now, the discussion of the structure of games and their longevity, that's a whole other topic.
That's
not today's topic.
That could be an interesting topic, actually. Put that down. Anyway, go ahead.
Today's topic
is that
the latest installment of the ever-growing, lifelong, literally you have to spend your entire life watching to catch it all, experience that is the Marvel Cinematic Universe, which is Captain Marvel, which had absolutely no drama about it whatsoever.
You know, yeah, but I had a lot of fun with it. I had a ton of fun watching it. It was pretty... I had a good time. You know, I don't need the drama all the time. Sometimes I just need a cool woman punching dudes in the face. That's all I need. You know, I'm not a discerning man, Ian. You give me face punching, I'm good, you know?
And there are lasers. There are lots of lasers.
And lasers. Yeah, I like lasers. And space. I like space, too. Space is cool.
Space. I like space. Space.
Exactly. Space. Yes. Space. Thank you. Space is very fun.
Now, some reviews I've seen here and there are critical of the film in that they say it is too reliant on where it takes place in the timeline.
Yeah.
Like, it happens pretty much before all the main movies, you know, when everything starts up, but after a bunch of the prequel stuff. So it sets up a lot of things. There's a lot of nods to stuff that would come later. And I don't agree with that. I felt like those moments were more Easter eggy,
mm-hmm,
and kind of fun bridges between the films. I don't feel like the film relied on them at all. It was Carol's story,
yeah,
start to finish.
Mm-hmm. I do think it's kind of funny how it was so many things were conveniently tied into her story, though, which, I mean, I kind of knew going in that there was going to be some references and some obvious nods to things that would be coming later in the timeline. So I knew that was going to happen, but it was still kind of like, a little, it kind of takes you out of it a little bit, I suppose. Not really, though.
I suppose your mileage may vary. There's one in particular that we'll discuss when we get to the spoilery part of the show, that I was kind of like, did we really need to take this detour? This only complicates things. But overall, the narrative itself was solidly structured, I thought.
Yeah. The middle of the film, the middle of the movie drags a little, but overall the pacing is pretty good.
I feel like it took the standard Marvel hero origin story and turned the structure on its head enough that it didn't feel like exactly the same film.
Yeah.
That we've seen how many times?
Looking exactly. You,
Doctor Strange.
Yeah, it kind of wove her origin story into the overall plot of the movie through like flashbacks and stuff. It wasn't just her origin. We don't really learn what her origin is till toward the end of the movie, really. Like the origin of her powers, yeah.
This is a critique I had of the first Guardians of the Galaxy movie, too. Is I feel like it throws you into the deep end of the cosmic stuff right at the start, so that it, for me, I had a little bit of trouble getting my bearings. And this is coming from someone who's been following the films and is slightly knowledgeable of the comic material.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt like the opening could have been watered down a little.
Yeah.
Maybe.
But yeah, I could definitely see that. I didn't really have too much of a problem personally, because I watch, not only do I watch the movies, but I'm also, I also follow Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has delved in a lot into the Kree. So I kind of knew the direction the Kree were going to ultimately be taking within the first few minutes. If you've been following all the ancillary material around the MCU, it definitely is like, oh, I know exactly where this is going to go. If you've been following Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., you're like, oh yeah, I know about the Kree. Yeah. And we know where we know what's happening here. So the Kree did play a part in Guardians, but definitely not nearly as much as they have in S.H.I.E.L.D. So yeah, I can definitely see that.
I will say that the CG this time around was vastly superior to some of the other outings. Black Panther, I'm looking at you.
Uh-huh.
Black Panther, I love you. You are a phenomenal film. You are one of my top three Marvel films easily. Your CG, not so much. But Captain Marvel, no, it was pretty. It was very pretty. We had kind of off to the side seats, so it was kind of dark for me because of the angle.
Yeah.
But what was there was pretty.
Oh, man. Freaking young Nick Fury was like...
Oh, man.
That is very, very, very convincing. Yeah, young Coulson and young Fury were like, I think this is magic? Is that what you guys did? Did you do magic? Did you figure out time travel?
It's honestly a little unnerving, because I thought it was going to be more makeup than anything, because the trailers made it look like, you know how with CG, when they use it to de-age actors, it looks really plastic and bad.
Yeah. Like, Rogue One, where he obviously, he looked like a video game character plopped down.
Oh, CG Tarkin. Yeah.
Tarkin. Yeah. He got plopped down in a video game character plopped down in the middle of real people.
It was almost close enough that it's like, okay, that could be convincing to someone who's never seen CG before, you know, from the 1800s. But for us with the discerning eye, not so much. This, though, to use the meme, Kyle, I can't see the pixels.
I can't tell. He looked like freaking, like, this is like a weird, lost, unreleased Samuel L. Jackson movie from the mid-90s. Like,
Now, with some of his physical stunts, you can tell that it's present day.
It's somebody, or it's a stunt double.
Right, but the facial is on screen for a lot of the movie.
Yep.
He's the co-star, and I didn't see a slip anywhere.
Nope.
A little spooky.
Yeah, it's very good. It's very good. It's very, very good, and very, you know, a little frightening at the same time. But it's pretty cool. I got to admit, it's pretty cool.
Speaking of frightening, I love the way that they utilized the Skrulls and the paranoia that came from anybody could be one of them.
Yep.
They didn't overplay their hand with it, and I won't spoil who was a Skrull at what point, but each reveal comes about and it's like, well, crap. And even the one that they blatantly spell out for you just makes it creepier. So I thought the Skrulls were used very well, especially given their gimmick.
I quite enjoyed the Skrulls in this movie. I was surprised. I was not expecting I don't want to go into spoiler territory. I just wasn't expecting the Skrulls to be who they were, I guess. I don't know if it's because I'm like somewhat familiar with their comic incarnations. At least I kind of know who they are and what has happened previously with them. But I mean, I don't know. It's just it's just interesting, because I wasn't expecting the Skrulls to be the type of people that they are in this movie. Mm. So I'm trying to skirt around spoilers and saying this very badly, saying what I want to say very badly without spoiling it. So anyway, go ahead.
There was one moment because they really try to hammer home the fact that this is takes place somewhere in the 90s.
Yeah, that's the nostalgia can be a little on the nose at times.
Here's the thing, though. There's a scene where Carol is very clearly wearing a Nine Inch Nails t-shirt.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm looking at it going, okay, like you said, it's a bit on the nose, clearly saying we're in the 90s. And then I thought about it and was like, no, during the 90s, everybody had that t-shirt.
Well, yeah, that's...
It was unavoidable. I didn't think you could be a U.S. citizen without that t-shirt. So it's like, all right, no, that's period accurate. All right.
I don't think... Yeah, that didn't bother me so much. Some of the musical choices were a little on the nose, though. A little. I didn't mind them so much. Guardians of the Galaxy also kind of played with nostalgic music like that and a nostalgic soundtrack. But it also kind of tied into Peter Quill's character. So, because we know that's like the music that he listened to because that's the music that he has on his only mixtape out in the galaxy. We don't really get that with Carol so much. She doesn't. It's not really part of her character, especially because we know she wasn't even technically there in the 90s because she disappeared in 1989. So.
The music in Guardians of the Galaxy is more an element of the film, whereas this is more of a set piece,
right.
I suppose.
Yeah, it's more...
It's not woven into it, it's just kind of placed there.
Yeah, it's more like, set dressing. Something like that.
So, overall, I would say I went into this expecting a Marvel movie.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I got. It's not my favorite. It didn't wow me like some others did, but... It was not nearly as bad as some of them. I'm looking at you, Thor 2. Or Iron Man 3.
Or Iron Man 2. I don't think Iron Man
3. I still like Iron Man 2.
I don't think Iron Man 3 is all that bad. It's Iron Man 2. It's Iron Man 2 that's a bit rough.
I will take Iron Man 2 any day of the week over Iron Man 3. Iron Man 3 is almost unwatchable, Brad.
All right, are we ready to... Are we ready to get into spoiler territory?
I think so. So this is your final warning. We're going to spoiler territory. Patrons over in the chat, we'll shoot you a quick text before we get into the Q&A if you want to bow out now so you don't get spoiled on the movie. But last warning. Here we go.
All right, Ian.
Spoilers.
Okay, Ian, I'm going to jump in here first.
Okay.
This is my favorite Marvel solo movie.
That's not a spoiler.
I know. Actually, it is a spoiler. It's a spoiler for the Bumblecast, Ian. I wanted to keep this discussion in the spoilers.
Okay.
I gotta be honest with you, man. I don't know. I don't know what it is about. I don't know. Like, Ant-Man and the Wasp is definitely up there. Black Panther. Like, I don't know. All the solo movies... for this phase, for the third phase of Marvel movies, except for Doctor Strange. That one's kind of... It was fine, but I'm like, eh. But all the solo movies are, like, my favorites of the MCU. Thor Ragnarok? Freaking great. But this one, I don't know, man. There's just something about it. I don't know. Something about this one and Black Panther, I think, that are kind of tying it up for me. I love them both. I really love this movie. I gotta be honest with you.
That's why we're here. It's to be honest, it didn't do much for me.
And I can understand that. I can see how like maybe some people aren't blown away by it, but I don't know.
Which isn't saying it's bad because this is the internet, and if you don't adore something, you obviously hate it. That's not what I'm saying. It's a perfectly fine Marvel movie. I had fun watching it. I'm looking forward to what Carol does to Thanos in Endgame. That's going to be a lot of fun. Bring it on.
I think I'm just enamored with Carol's character. I think I just loved her character and her characterization in this. I think that's a lot of it. And her relationship with Maria. I like the fact that this is a movie with a female lead that does not rely on having a romantic aspect of the character with at least a standard romantic aspect whether you want to see Carol's relationship with Maria as romantic or not. They seem to kind of leave that open to interpretation, I suppose. Like you can kind of make your decision. There's definitely
a platonic vibe off it, but maybe that's me.
I don't know. It seems kind of interesting because, like, it's pretty clear that Carol kind of rejected her own family. Like, her Monica, when they're recounting everything about Carol's life, which somehow Monica knows everything about Carol's life even before Monica was born. It's like, I don't know. I don't know. It's interesting to think about, though. But I think I'm just like, I really like that sort of aspect of it. Like, the fact that Nick Fury's just there to be cool and just to be Nick Fury. But it was before he was, it's before Nick Fury was all like grim and brooding like he is now.
Yeah.
It's just cool. I will say the one thing I'm disappointed in, the one thing I'm most disappointed in is that Coulson is a very, very ancillary character. I was really hoping he would play more of a part in this. I know he's the rookie, he's the newcomer to S.H.I.E.L.D., and he played that okay. But yeah. There wasn't really a lot to his character. And as someone who has been following Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and who really just liked his character to begin with when he started showing up in Phase 1 movies, I was kind of disappointed that we didn't get to kind of delve more into sort of his early beginnings as a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent. So I think that's kind of a shame, but I do like that they kind of played his character as being more, rather than being sort of beholden to S.H.I.E.L.D., he has more of a loyalty to Fury.
Mm-hmm.
So I did enjoy that, but it was definitely one of those things where I'm like, oh man, I was hoping for more Coulson, because I love him. I love his character, but
I'm with you on wanting more Coulson, but I am fine with what they did, because I feel like he would have too many parallels with Nick's journey throughout the movie.
Right.
And if we got to choose, I got to go with Fury.
Fury is definitely the more important and the more obvious character to go with, but I would have liked to have a little bit more Coulson in there. You know, it's kind of a nitpick, I suppose. It's one of those things, but you know, it at least establishes him in the early Marvel Cinematic Universe, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
And so they haven't like forgotten that he exists, because they've kind of exiled him off to his own show now, because he's not been in any of the movies since Phase 1 until now. So I've been hoping he would return eventually, and I'm glad he did, although I'm a little disappointed that it's, you know, in the past and that we didn't get to see too much of him, but it's okay.
Kind of along that same sentiment, when I heard that Ronan the Accuser was showing up again, I was hoping that we would get to see more of him to make up for the squandered opportunity in Guardians of the Galaxy.
No, they really dropped the ball on that one.
Yeah. So, I mean, the amount that he shows up, he might as well have not been in the film.
Yeah, essentially.
Which is doubly disappointing, because we're not going to get another chance unless we get a Captain Marvel in Betweequel.
Sure.
That shows her fighting the Kree or something, which I would be all on board for. Once the movie was done, I was like, all right, that was a nice appetizer. Now show me the actual Captain Marvel movie where she's blowing up Kree warships and kicking all sorts of ass in space. Mm-hmm. No? We're doing Endgame now? Okay.
Oh, I would definitely love to see that.
Okay. Just, if we do it, can we please actually have Ronan show up as an antagonist with some depth and showing off why he was so scary? I mean, in Guardians of the Galaxy, he kind of just shows up and is like, I am all intimidating, believe me. I'm like, okay, I have an Infinity Stone now. Well, that's kind of hacks, dude. Now I'm going to be defeated by a breakdancing move. Okay, we're...
You know what was really fun? Talos.
Yeah, he was.
That's Ben Mendelsohn, I believe, playing Talos, the main Kree. Or not Kree, the main Skrull. And it was fantastic. it's just like, I don't know. The humor of this movie really gets me, and I quite enjoyed him. Just him, like, kind of shrugging when they look outside the window of and Monica's out in the yard with her mother, who's not her mother.
That gave me chills.
And I'm like, the way
fake mom looks over and just smiles, is like, okay, you have my attention. But
yeah,
it's like you touched upon earlier, it's kind of weird that the Skrulls were, once we get the full reveal, full on sympathetic.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, because I know, like, the Kree Skrull War in the comics has been, I don't know too much about it, but I know that it's definitely, like, the Skrulls have been, like, a very antagonistic force in the comics, because they've, like, taken over people, they've, like,
taken over people's
lives, they've been just kind of always, was it Secret Wars that factors in the Skrulls, or is that this? No, Secret Wars originally was the one where they got sent to, like, Doom World or whatever, or not Doom World. That's the second Secret Wars. I'm trying to remember what what all these freaking crossovers and freaking events are. Marvel, you have too many events. Stop it.
Yeah, I honestly am not that familiar with the side of the Marvel universe. I just know that Skrulls are shapeshifters, and they tried to do, I think it was Secret Invasion. Where
Secret Invasion, that's it, not Secret Wars.
Like, some of these characters have been Skrulls for years.
Yeah, and, including Carol.
And I kind of threw my hands up with that one, where the whole point was they had, like, bred or trained a whole bunch of Skrulls to be undetectable. And the way that the heroes overcome is that Mr. Fantastic invents a machine that can detect them.
Yeah, why not?
That's not witty. That's not satisfying. I hate Reed Richards. Anyway.
Okay, good. I'm glad I'm not the only one.
Get Aaliyah to start a rant at some point. She'll go on for a full half hour.
Yeah, he's pretty terrible. He's pretty terrible.
The continuity thingy that I mentioned earlier. Okay, the Tesseract.
Uh-huh.
It was found by Red Skull in World War II and lost in the North Atlantic.
Yep.
Howard Stark finds it and brings it into S.H.I.E.L.D. And then at some point, Mar-Vell takes it for the Pegasus Project so that Nick Fury has to recover it again thanks to Goose.
Yep.
It feels like, I mean, it doesn't really complicate anything in the long run. It just feels like a kind of weird side road that we didn't necessarily have to go on. But I guess if we're trying to explain how Carol got crazy superpowers by an engine blowing up that was channeling Infinity Stone energy, it's, I guess, timey-wimey, wibbly-wobbly enough to make sense.
Yeah, it works for me. I wasn't too bothered by it. I mean, it's definitely a little like, what, does S.H.I.E.L.D. just have butterfingers? And if you watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., the answer to that question is a resounding yes. But it's still, it's kind of silly. Like, what? What happened? I'm also a little disappointed that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., like, the earlier seasons, their main mode of transportation is called the bus, which is just like a giant, beefy plane, cargo plane.
Yeah.
And I was a little disappointed that we didn't get to see, like, and it's a decommissioned one because they don't use the bus anymore. It's just this particular S.H.I.E.L.D. team is using the bus because, well, they're, like, on the lower rungs. Nobody cares. Just give them the scraps. And it's also, like, not nearly as detectable. It's, you know, flies under the radar a little bit. Not literally, but you know what I mean.
Right.
So, I was a little disappointed that we didn't get to see, like, some of the earlier S.H.I.E.L.D. vehicles, like have the bus there or something like that, you know, a little bit more of a reference.
That would have been fun.
It would have been fun to have a few more references to kind of earlier S.H.I.E.L.D. and the stuff that we've gotten from the show, but it's not a huge deal. It's just kind of a lost opportunity, I think. But they don't seem to be wanting to acknowledge the TV side of things much in the movies, so whatever.
I thought the official word was that the TV was not, the TV stuff was not canon to the cinematic side of things.
It's kind of supposed to be. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. definitely is, because they've name-dropped Thanos in the last few episodes of the most recent season, leading up to, or actually just after, the release of Infinity War, and pretty much the ending of that last season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is pretty much like right before the snap. So, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.'s not coming back till after Endgame. So who knows what's going to happen? I don't know if they're going to even acknowledge it. That's kind of up in the air. Obviously, the Netflix side has not acknowledged anything since Phase 1, so they don't really seem to be... I don't know. And I don't necessarily want them to be, like, name-dropping everything all the time, but it would be nice to have a little bit more of a... little bit more cohesion in this universe than we've been getting.
Sure, but I have to imagine that trying to orchestrate the cinematic universe by itself has to be a Herculean task.
Oh, absolutely.
And then making that sync up with any one of the television programs would be an absolute nightmare, let alone the rest of them, those that haven't been outright canceled just yet.
Right. And the fact that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. had to kind of spin its wheels in order to sync up with Winter Soldier is kind of...
Yeah.
indication of that, but still, it would be nice to have at least a little bit more acknowledgement of world-shattering things happening. Or universe
Hydra yet? No.
Universe-shattering things, even like it's like, okay, well, all right, whatever, it's fine. I know the comics also don't always reference things that are happening concurrently and whatever. I'm not expecting it to be like, oh, we're going to just name drop everybody all in every episode. But, you know,
sure,
just tie it in a little bit more. Come on.
Now, I have never been a purist when it comes to these films, because I feel like the movies have taken the core elements of the characters and their mythos and presented them in a more digestible fashion.
Oh,
even
sure.
A better incarnation in the majority of the cases.
Absolutely.
Not
yes.
Every one of them, looking at you, Mandarin, but you know,
yeah.
Overall, for Marvel though, if you were a big fan of that side of the Marvel universe, I could see you being a little cantankerous over the complete and total change to Marvel. I mean, the elements are still there. It's still a Kree spy. It's still someone who falls in love with, or someone who goes against the Kree in general. There's still an explosion. There's still all this, that, and the other. But the cinematic Marvel is really a huge departure from the comics Marvel. And he has so much story to him that just is not available now.
Yeah.
So if you are a fan of that incarnation of the character, I could understand them being a little rankled with that aspect of the franchise just being off the table entirely.
Yeah, I understand that.
And I also understand doing it that way because there have been so many Captain Marvels. And if you want to make Carol this kind of cornerstone of the cinematic universe overall, you need to make her kind of the Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
Otherwise, there's that asterisk to it. And
well, I mean, we've got another Captain Marvel movie coming out this month, so...
No, it's Shazam. Always has been.
we won't talk about that. We won't talk about this. Nope, not at all.
Although that looks like fun. I am looking forward to Shazam.
It actually does. I'm like, wow, I'm looking forward to a DC movie. What's going on here? I do want to see it, so we might have to talk about that one.
I haven't gotten around to see Aquaman yet. Dadgummit, I need to get to it.
I haven't either. I don't know when I will, if ever. It's not that I don't necessarily, like, I'm not wanting to see it, but I don't, like, I'm not going out of my way to go see it, too, so, I don't know. Looking forward to Wonder Woman 84, though. I don't even know what that's going to be like, but looking forward to it. I love that freaking movie, man. I don't know what it is, because I can totally see why someone wouldn't be so into it, but I don't know.
It wasn't bad, it's just, it was kind of like, yep, I saw it. Yeah. Next.
I don't know. It just resonated with me, I think, a bit more than some other people might.
I was going to make a joke about how the movie spoiled Endgame, because now all we know is that Goose is going to eat Thanos. That's the end of the movie.
I hope so.
He just coughs up the Infinity Gauntlet, unsnap it all.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
Everyone's beaten and battered.
Everyone.
Carol's thrown an entire starship. Thanos is like, you can't beat me. And Goose is like, meow. And that's it.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing is that, like, I'm looking at that, like, there's so many people complaining that they hope that Carol doesn't just come in and Endgame and be like, oh, just fixes everything. She just comes out of nowhere and fixes everything. I'm like, I guess I'd be fine with that.
No, the team needs to do something, but she's not, she is a broadsword, not a scalpel.
Right. Yeah.
So whatever the team needs to do to unsnap the universe, they will do. They just need someone to hold Thanos still for a flat minute, and she can do that. By still, I mean wallop him through a couple of planets that are now depopulated, and then he stops moving, and they get to do the thing.
Yeah, yeah. Jeez, the level of power creep of the Marvel Universe, though, of the cinematic universe is off the freaking rails at this point. And, you see, here's kind of the thing, is that now we've established Carol, I can definitely see how maybe in the future she would not be that compelling of a character and she wouldn't be all that great. I guess it just kind of depends on the writer and what kind of story they tell with her. Because Superman kind of tends to fall in the same trap.
Yeah.
Where his powers are so exponentially greater than everybody else's that it's like, oh, there's like zero drama involving him. And you even mentioned that with Captain Marvel, it's like there's not really a whole heck of a lot of drama. And it's like, well, now that she's unchained, basically, that she's not being held back anymore.
The thing with Superman, I think, could be interesting. You can't be put less him in peril. You can put everyone else in peril, though. And so the tension comes from, you know, Superman has the tool set to save everyone. How is he going to do it? You know, he can't be everywhere at once. How can he, you know, save enough people? And that was one of the few redeeming things of, what was it, Superman Returns? Or the one with Creepy Stalker Superman before the DC Universe started up.
That would have been, was that Superman Returns? Or are we talking Man of Steel? We're not talking Man of Steel, right?
Right, because that was the first Henry Cavill one, right?
Yeah.
The one before that.
Superman Returns was Brandon Routh. Is that the one you're thinking
of? Yeah, okay. Scruffy Man says it's that one. So, I mean, when Metropolis is going to hell and he's flying around, he's ring up the glass so it doesn't hit people and catching things last second, it's like, yeah, okay, that's cool. That's Superman saving the day.
Right.
Without his wall rebuilding vision. So with Carol, you're going to have to put her in a position where the threats warrant that level of power, or her level of power is too much for the crisis at hand. You know, sure, she could beat the bad guy, but that would put him through the edge of the spaceship, and that would, like, explosively decompress everyone out into space. You can't do that. She's got to whittle it down. I don't know.
It's just kind of, I'm just wondering where they could take her character. I'm definitely hoping for a sequel. I'm sure we'll see one, considering how successful this movie's been. And even the less successful Marvel movies have gotten sequels, like, you know, Ant-Man. So, hey. And not to say that Ant-Man isn't a great movie, because I love Ant-Man, but, you know, I know that the first movie was kind of below expectations, wasn't it? Or at least it was a little slower than they anticipated, sales-wise.
I don't know.
Yeah, I think so. I think it kind of evened out by the end, but it took a little while to get there. But Ant-Man and the Wasp, on the other hand, boom, great movie. I like it. I like all of them, Ian. I like all of them for different reasons, some more than others. I don't know what it is. Marvel's just like on a freaking roll. It's how they go, I guess. All the TV shows have been pretty great. Inhumans, the show, was eh. But every other one's been great.
Really? Iron Fist?
season two really redeemed a lot of what happened in season one. I won't lie. I think it's because they made it the Misty and Colleen show. They made
to
it
to remove the main character.
They made it a Daughters of the Dragon show. Yeah, that's all you really had to do with Iron Fist was just get rid of Iron Fist. It fixes the problem right up. I'm not joking. It fixed it right up. Boom. Sideline him. Get him out of there. Get the Daughter of the Dragon in there. Perfect. That's all you need. Get rid of Iron Fist. Don't need him. He was actually a lot better in season two. And he was pretty good in Luke Cage.
I heard that the once he was in Defenders, that was where he shone. But
and Defenders is kind of where he started his redemption process, I think. And then from there, he got steadily a little bit better. And then for season two, they just sidelined him for most of the season and stood up Colleen and Misty. And it's like, yep, you did the right thing, guys. Congratulations. Now, if you would only have done a Daughters of the Dragon show, we'd have been all good. But instead, Netflix had to cancel everything.
Oh, we have to appease the mighty Disney and their own streaming service.
It's Netflix, though, that apparently canceled all of them. Not Disney. Disney didn't want to.
I call shenanigans.
But I think Netflix... Well, I think Netflix is just seeing the writing on the wall. I can't really blame them, necessarily, but at the same time, it's like, come on.
Well, we're getting off track. Is there anything else we want to say about this before we move on to the Q&A?
Oh man, I don't know. I really like this movie. But I definitely understand like people who are complaining and people who may not like it as much as I do. And that's fine. It doesn't bother me at all. It's just like there's something about it that I really love about it. I love the movie. So I don't know what to do, Ian. What do I do? Just like the things I like,
yes,
and screw everybody,
yes,
else? Okay.
Yes.
Okay, cool. All right, fine. Screw all y'all.
I mean, I came away from it going, that was fun. But that does not diminish anybody else's enjoyment of it. If you thought it rocked, then good for you. I'm glad you got more out of it than I did. I'm sure there's other films, Iron Man 2, that I enjoy that other people lampoon. So it's fine.
There are things about Iron Man 2 that I like too. So there are aspects of all the movies that I like, even Thor 2. So, you know, some things are okay. Some things about Incredible Hulk I didn't mind even. And we don't even acknowledge that movie anymore.
No, we really don't.
No, we do not. Okay, Ian. Are we ready to move on into the Q&A?
Do you want to pop over to the chat and let the patrons know that they can start listening again?
Oh, yeah. I'll tell you. You can listen again now. You can listen again if you were avoiding spoilers. But I don't think... I don't know if they were. Everyone and more are here now. So, all right, guys. You can listen again.
Alrighty, so we are going to start into the Q&A. If you want your question on the show, write to us at bumblecast@yahoo.com, on Twitter @bumblecast, on the comment sections of any of the YouTube videos, or if you're a patron, just comment anywhere on the Patreon page. That's patreon.com/bumblecast, and we'll find it. We'll answer it. But if you want to get to the front of the line, you can become a priority question patron for just a tiny little $5.
Yes, indeed. And to start us off, to kick us off, we've got the priority Q&A, and we've got two essays from two different people. I give you all A's on your ability to write lengthy questions, but F's on your ability to be succinct. Okay, maybe I give you like D minuses. I won't fail you outright.
All right, Professor Kyle, let's get to this priority Q&A.
All right. Of course, we got to start off with one from our good buddy, Scruffy Matt.
Howdy, Scruffy.
Good evening, fellas. Wow, it is evening. Yeah, good job. Good job, Scruffy. It's like you knew. Let's take a trip back in time to 2005, to the ending of the Shadow the Hedgehog game. Shadow stands in grumpy triumph as Black Arms Chunks rains down on the planet and declares that he's putting the past behind him as he says goodbye forever, Shadow the Hedgehog. To reinforce that, he was putting to reinforce that he was putting his past behind him, we got that Sweet Crush 40 song over the closing credits, Never Turn Back. Then a year later, Sonic 06 came out, and we find out that Shadow is now working for Gunn. I can see why Shadow would want to join Gunn, as he probably thought that could change them from within, that he could change them from within, and prevent another Maria incident from ever happening. But after the ending of Shadow's game practically walloped us over the head with the message that Shadow was done with the past, I was pretty surprised that Shadow went in that direction when he decided on a career. Were you surprised as well? And whose idea do you think it was for Shadow to become a Gunn agent? Did Rouge suggest it and drag an unsuspecting Shadow to an interview? Did the president demand it of the Gunn commander? Did the Gunn commander decide of his own volition to extend Shadow an olive branch? Or did Shadow just march into the commander's office and say, all right, buddy boy, this is how things are going to happen from now on?
Okay, Scruffy, buckle yourself in, because Shadow is not an agent of Gunn.
He's an agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. Ha! Plot twist! Now,
I ran into this factoid myself when writing, what was it, Shadowfall in Sonic Universe, in the briefing room of Gunn. You know, I thought what you thought. You know, he's working with Gunn in 06, so he's a agent of Gunn. He is not. Sega was very specific about that. Shadow does not work with anybody in any capacity. The fact that he was using Gunn ordnance and receiving intel from Gunn and doing anything Gunn-related was happenstance.
Sega, what are you doing?
So, Rouge doesn't work for Gunn directly either, as far as I'm aware, and neither does Omega. And the status of Team Dark actually being a cohesive team seems nebulous at best. The direction that I've been given is Shadow works on his own, and if he is in league with anybody else, it is specifically only because it will suit his needs. So that's your answer. It's not a contradiction because it never happened.
Sega, what you doing? What you do, Sega, what you do. Don't know what we're going to do about them, Ian. Anyway, speaking of Ian, let's move on to a question from Ian Waffles.
Nothing starts my morning right like a big stack of buttery Ian Waffles.
I was going to say, are you Ian Pancakes? Is this your arch nemesis, Ian Waffles, Ian?
Strangely, they taste like pork. Anyway, what's the question?
There are two character moments from the Archie Sonic comics that I wanted further clarification on. The first is during House of Cards. Are we meant to assume that Tails' anger over Fiona was the only problem he had with Sonic that was reasonable? Or were his other problems with Sonic, like him treating Tails poorly on occasion, or taking him for granted, also to be taken seriously? If so, was Sonic's apology about hurting Tails and being a jerk meant to imply those issues as well? Second, when Sonic's dad Jules...
Let's take this in chunks.
Ahead. Okay.
So, man, it's been a long time since House of Cards came and went. fun fact, I know I've said this in the past, but House of Cards was meant to be a major story arc lasting many issues, delving into each of the Freedom Fighters and, you know, how they viewed the split. And I was told, no, just make that two issues. We're going straight into Interjack after that. And it's like, okay. I was told, drum up the drama between Sonic and Tails. That'll sell books. It's like,
will
okay.
It? Will it?
It's one of the storylines that gets talked about to this day, although not necessarily for the reasons we wanted, but
right.
To get to Waffles' question, yes, what I was aiming for with that story was that Sonic was being kind of thoughtless in his actions. Everything he did was kind of surface level, meant to be positive or good or whatever, but he didn't think about how it would play out outside of how he had just rationalized it himself. And Tails, who had been slighted through the many, many, many years leading up to that point, finally got tired of it now that he had his parents there as an anchor besides Sonic. Now, the whole thing was that Amadeus the first time Tails had had his father back in his life. Amadeus is gone, and Sonic's like, eh, that's what you get for causing a ruckus. And yes, he's right, but dude, think about what you're saying first. So the Fiona aspect was not supposed to be the central only grievance between the two of them. The whole conflict was supposed to boil down to a lack of communication. Tails didn't come forward to Sonic and say, listen, this is really jamming up my jelly. You need to cut it out. And Sonic didn't think beyond, oh, I'm doing the right thing. He should have thought, well, how will this affect others? And when they finally stopped and talked it out, Sonic realizes, oh, I've made a mistake. Tails realizes, oh, I should have been more assertive. What was not right with me? And the two of them, you know, find the magical power of friendship and bond and go from there. That was the intention. Execution's up for debate. Anyway, second half of Waffles' question.
Alrighty. Second, when Sonic's dad Jules told Scourge, do you want that on your head as well, in regards to Scourge destroying him, Scourge drops his bravado and even cries. Is Scourge's reaction to imply that he would actually feel a little bad about destroying Sonic's dad, possibly because of the pain the loss of his own dad caused him? Or was there another implication from his reaction?
That one, see, I can't remember perfectly because some of the reactions were on John Gray's part. And John Gray's the type of artist where if you ask for an inch, he will give you a mile or seven. The man's commitment to detail and stuff is insane. You've seen his variant covers for the IDW book. It's nuts.
Yeah.
How many ink pens have you killed, Jonathan, in the pursuit of art?
All of them. And more.
And see, now I can't remember if Scourge crying was an embellishment on his part or if it was scripted, and I don't know if I can find that script again. It's been a long time. But one way or the other, Scourge was supposed to have backed down when Jules confronted him. And that was supposed to be that Scourge being the anti-Sonic is a coward deep down. Given whatever trials and tribulations, when you stare into the abyss, Sonic won't blink, Scourge will. So with these bombastic threats and getting all up in Jules' face and all this, when he's finally confronted, not only by, you know, someone who's not afraid of him, but someone in a kind of parental role, Scourge crumbles. So if, let's just assume that the crying was scripted, it wasn't so much out of regret over what he would have done in his world, but out of this kind of fearful, impotent rage. He knows he can't stand up to this guy who's literally powerless next to him. Scourge could take him into a million pieces in no time. But the fact that he is too scared to do anything and realizes that just riles him up, so he retreats. And he hates that about himself. So it wasn't so much regret over anything that happened to the anti-Jules. It's Scourge just being a morally weak and constitutionally weak individual.
Alrighty. And our next priority question comes from good old Mike B.
Howdy, Mike.
So on Bumblecast 60, I know, so long ago, you mentioned that the air charms replaced your original idea of using the bubble / aqua shields in Waves of Change. My question then is, if given the chance, how would you have fleshed out the bubble shield? Would you have made it more or less the same as the air charms, or would it have gone in a different direction since it didn't really work out for Waves of Change?
I don't really know. The original intention was that they would just be bubble shields like out of the games. And what co-writer Aaliyah Baker pointed out is, how do you interact with the world like that? Do they reach through the bubble to access something? Can they touch each other? Do the bubbles merge? If there is a fight, do the bubbles pop? There's a lot of logistical issues that arise from the fact that they are in bubbles versus you just have a necklace. So that's why we went with the air charms, is because it was so much easier to write around. Plus, it was a lot easier to draw because the artist doesn't have to worry about these giant spheres overlapping everything. In terms of utilization of the shields in future works, I'd like to, but they've become such a non-entity in the modern games that they don't really factor into the greater mythos anymore. So it's on my I would like to do this at some point list, but it's not a priority right now.
Alrighty. And let's move on into the standard Q&A. First one comes from Daniel S. In light of a previous episode, in a hypothetical sequel to Into the Spider-Verse, what incarnation of Spider-Man would you like to see in it? For the sake of this question, let's imagine there are no rights restrictions and infinite effects budget. Personally, I would love to see the Tokusatsu Spider-Man, aka the Emissary of Hell, perhaps with some kind of Roger Rabbit effect going on where he's played by a live-action actor. Pretty good.
I think you win with that suggestion. What else can I possibly contribute?
Yeah, I can't. I don't even know. I can't even think of all of the different incarnations of Spider-Man. Like, there's so many.
I really liked Scarlet Spider, the Ben Reilly Scarlet Spider.
Yeah.
So I would like to see him show up. We've already had the blonde Peter, though. So I don't know if that's retreading old ground, but that would be cool. I don't know if you could bring Kane in without him being too complex, but he would be kind of neat as maybe a semi-antagonist of the film. I don't know, but I just really dig the, you know, torn up hoodie over the flat red jumpsuit look. I just really dug Scarlet Spider.
Yeah. Jeez, I can't think of like another incarnation of Spider-Man to have in there. Like, the Tokusatsu one is it's a very good suggestion. I don't know. Like, would you consider Spider-Gwen an incarnation of Spider-Man? I don't.
Insofar as
I don't know.
Spider-Man's kind of like the core concept that all is based off of, so yeah.
I guess. I know. I think Silk is supposed to be in the next one or in a Spider-Gwen movie that they might be talking about making. I don't know. I've heard something about Silk, and I like Silk, so. She has one of the best looking spider costumes, I think, between her and Spider-Gwen. Both of them have freaking great costumes, but I can't think of anybody else necessarily off the top of my head. All right. Next question comes from Clay A. At first, I disliked Rough and Tumble as they were a bit generic in their first appearance, in my opinion. However, since issue 13, which is great, by the way, they're growing on me a bit. Without giving spoilers, do you have any big plans for them you'd like to tease?
I do believe this episode will come out before Sonic number 15 by a smidgen. So I'll say Sonic 15 is going to have a big turning point for their characters.
Ho ho ho. That is quite the tease. Very nice. Next one, and our final question on this episode of the Mumblecast comes from Spiral Senshi. So, what's up with the ARMS comic? It's safe to say it's not getting a January release. Okay, this question's a little old.
But they're so right.
There hasn't been any word on it, though. Was it pushed back again? The answer seems to be yes.
And, yeah, I don't know. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I want to say, Ian, we're still getting quite a few questions about the ARMS comic. So.
Oh, I know. I'm getting them directly myself.
Okay. We're getting them in a lot of them, especially in the YouTube comments. So I'm sorry, guys. I'm sorry that it's not out yet. I mean, I can't control it, obviously. I have nothing to do with it. But, you know, I definitely want to read it, too. Hurry up.
And I'm very glad that people are asking this because it shows that they are still excited and want it, which is great because I want it to do very well. I don't have any official word on it short of follow the Dark Horse Twitter or other social media. It is in development. I just don't know what the timetable is because my part of the process is pretty much done. I do know that it's in production. I don't think there is an official word on it yet, but follow their social media, and that's where you'll hear the news about it first. That's where I will get my news from, and as soon as I hear, I will be going, hey, here it comes! But this is not like the Mega Man hiatus situation. This is definitely, it's on the way. Just, I don't know anything beyond that.
Alrighty. And that will do it for this edition of the Mumblecast.
Kyle, where can the fine peoples of the internet find you once the show is over?
You can find me at KyleJCRB on Twitter, or you can head on over to KNGI.org, where you can find archived episodes of the Bumblecast and many other shows, including my other show, Nitro Game Injection, which you can also find streaming live on Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern Time over there at the same site, KNGI.org. It's all there, and now you can listen to awesome remixed video game music with me and chill out and hang out for a while. It's a good time. So, and there's always music streaming over there, so KNGI.org, you can tune in and listen 24/7. There's other shows on there. There's remix music going on. There's replays of Bumblecast and other shows too, so check it out. Ian, where can the people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at IanFlynnBKC, or head over to my website, BumbleKing.com. That has my con schedule, that has a release schedule of all the books that I've been working on. It has all the news that I've got coming out. It's got my entire portfolio. Recently on Twitter, I was talking about the Michelangelo one-shot I worked on, and got a lot of, oh, you worked on Ninja Turtles? And it's like, yes! And if you go over to BumbleKing.com, you can see all the Ninja Turtle stuff I've worked on, so you can hunt it down and fulfill your fun collection. Put it next to your Ian Waffles.
Ian Waffles. I'm going to have
it. Never say that again. You can follow info on the show over on Twitter at Bumblecast, and you can contact us at BumbleCast@Yahoo.com.
I'm going to have an Ian Waffles versus Ian Pancakes battle. Who will win?
If you're a patron, you can get exclusive live streaming gaming every Sunday evening, usually around 10 p.m. Or you can head over to twitch.tv/BumbleCastGaming to catch us streaming live whenever we get around to it.
And don't forget, you can also head on over to the Bumble Store, where we sadly do not sell Ian Waffles or Ian Pancakes, but I'm hoping we can rectify that soon.
That shop.spreadshirt.com/BumbleStore.
Did I not say that, or did I just... That makes it even funnier.
You can get a whole bunch of stuff with Ian and Kyle logos on it. And now, before Kyle gets even more creepy with his obsession of me, let's get into the patrons who make this show possible.
I'm not obsessed with you. I'm obsessed with Ian Waffles.
That is infinitely worse. Big thank you to Daniel H., Eric F., Connell T., Alex B., Ian, Mike B., Saturn Flicky, Xanos, Duas Diz Dent, Scruffy Matt, Chris A., John B., Jennifer R., David C., Rem the Late, Lisa M., Samuel P., Sam Cybercat, Digama F., Wow, Dragon Superfan, AE Double, Brody M., Neil H., Justin G., Dan M. S., Adam T., Silly String, Takaro, Lee H. K., Chevelle, Don B., Sin Fritz, Hako Ogata Comics, John M., James K., Adam B. T., Papadrip, Doppelis, Overthinking Films, and Ron.
Ah, good old Ron. And Valerie brings up Ian Crepes. I don't know, man. You're throwing too many breakfast pastries in here. Things are getting a little crazy. Anyway,
this is going to wrap up the International House of Ians, episode 87. We hope you're not hungry, because if the zombie apocalypse happens tomorrow, I'm doomed. Have a good night, everybody.
I'm glad I could help, Ian.
Is that what you call it?
Yeah. Is it not? I don't know. Seems that pretty helpful to me. Ian Tarts? That sounds weird. And the other ones have not sounded weird, you say? And the answer is, nah, not really. On the spot, I'm very bad at coming up with things, which is leaves me to wonder why I'm doing podcasts.
Well, we have something of a script to work off of, but...
I guess. Well, our script for Captain Marvel was the words Captain Marvel.
But now...
No! You've been listening to The Bumblecast, a co-production of Bumble King Comics and the KNGI Network. Original theme music composed by Ken Coda Snyder. Remixed intro by T-Lopes. Find out more information, along with podcast feeder links, MP3 downloads, and more at BumbleKing.com and KNGI.org. I have to do something. It's very important, Ian.
All right, do the thing.
It's very important what I have to do, but I'm not going to tell you what it is.
That's fine. I trust you.
Well, there's your first mistake.